Welcome to the Context Machine. This is episode 650, a truly auspicious number. I'm sure. I'm Brian Chaffin.
I'm glad you are sure about who you are.
I'm sure about being auspicious. 650. Oh, well, it's round. It's a roundish number.
It is a roundish number. I mean, there are curves on all three digits.
So we do the show once a week. It's episode 650. So does that mean we started this show in 1972? Because I think that might be right.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay.
Well, wait, you forgot about one of the leap years. So it might have been 1971.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but yes, I'm sure you're Brian Chaffin. Uh-huh. And I am sure I am Jeff Gamet. Okay. Everyone. We have a website. In the notes here, it says, please make sure to check us out at our new home, contextmachine.io. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yes.
The new home smell is gone.
it's there. It's back. You can also use contextmachine.io to reach out to us. You can find us on Mastodon at Context Machine, or you can write to us at, Context Machine Podcast.
Yes.
At gmail.com.
Yes. Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
We have a sponsor today, LinkedIn Jobs.
Excellent. They've been sponsors for a long time, which means that you folks must like them. So thank you.
Yeah, you folks must be hiring.
Yes, that's good. And LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help you hire. We're going to tell you more about them later in the show. Have you seen Dune 2 yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man. Have you seen Dune 1?
I did. Or Dune. And I really liked it.
And I'm not talking about Shirtless Sting.
Man, the Shirtless Sting version. So that would be the David Lynch version.
Yes, the David Lynch version. The Shirtless Sting version.
Yes, I saw that in the theater. The plastic jockstrap version. I saw that in the theater when it came out. And as we walked into the theater, they were handing everyone two-sided letter size sheets of paper, totally full of text front and back, that had all the information that we needed to know.
Really?
To be able to get through the movie. Yeah. It's like each character and a quick bio and
fascinating. And,
yeah, the different planets and the different houses and the crazy thing is you could hear through the entire movie as people were flipping over the sheets to check and see.
Well, how are they seeing what them? They need. This is pre-smartphone, this is pre-smartwatch. So how would they read them?
Okay, so you know how when you try and read by moonlight or candlelight and you turn your body and then kind of aim the paper towards the light source? Basically, everyone watched the movie sitting sideways in their chair and holding the sheets up so that they were facing the screen. So the light reflecting from the screen
That's ridiculous.
Would hopefully give them enough light to try and read.
That was a very poor decision on someone's part.
Yeah, well, I did enjoy the movie. It was weird. Did enjoy the movie, but there were a lot of poor decisions on someone's part.
Yes, yes, and it does not hold up to a modern eye. So it's funny, Tony Lawrence, he's a longtime listener. We mentioned him recently because he offered a splendid review of my book.
Very cool. Yeah.
On Medium. And anyway, the point is he saw my post about Dune 2 being epic and he said he didn't like the first one because he thought it changed too much. So I'm like, what are you talking about? It didn't change anything. And he's like, are you talking about the one with Sting? And he didn't say Sting, but he thought I meant the first, by the first Dune movie that I was talking about, the David Lynch movie.
Oh
yeah, so that was kind of funny, but no, we're talking about the what's his name, Dune director, Denis Villeneuve.
See, I wasn't even going to try and offer up a pronunciation because I was waiting for you to do your completely inaccurate French accent.
My faux French.
Oh, is that what we're calling it now? Faux French?
Yeah, it's totally faux French. It's not real. Did he do? I've been meaning to look this up. So we're doing a show, so I figured I'll go ahead and look it up now. Did he do that one movie?
Did he? No, who's the other one?
He did Blade Runner 2049. I didn't realize that he was the director. I did not realize that he was the director of Blade Runner 2049.
Well, look at that. You learned something new today. That means today is a success.
So, Luc Besson. I'm thinking that he did the movie that I was thinking that Mr. Villeneuve did.
But, see, told you it was the other guy.
Yeah. Mr. Lucy. Oh, he did Lucy. Oh, that was Lucy was good. And Luc Besson, of course, did The Fifth Element. Oh, and he did The Professional. Anyway, so there's Dune 2. It's an amazing movie. It is so incredibly epic, and Jeff hasn't seen it yet. So we're not going to release it. We would, of course, be careful not to give any spoilers because it is it's a brand new movie. It's still in theaters, but we would normally talk about that. But it is amazing. Jeff, I didn't tell you this. So we talked about how the first Dune movie only differentiated from the book in like two very tiny points, right? The second movie differentiates a lot more, and I didn't mind.
Oh, okay. Well, that's actually saying a lot right there.
Because it made the movie better. That's the thing. That's the thing with the Lord of the Rings movies, especially the Return of the King. That's the thing with the Game of Thrones TV shows. The vast majority of the random arbitrary changes that Peter Jackson and whoever the hell directed the Game of Thrones, their arbitrary changes were just arbitrary and did not improve the story. And that's what pisses me off. Dune 2 does take some liberties with the show, and I loved it. But liberties with the story.
That's great. It's okay. I knew what you meant.
And I am almost as protective of Frank Herbert and Dune as I am of Tolkien and Lord of the Rings or George Martin and the Game of Thrones. Almost.
And that's saying something as well.
Yeah.
Changing for the medium.
Yes. Very important.
Very important. Douglas Adams was the master of that. I mean, he wrote a radio play series called Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And then he rewrote it for the other mediums that it was going to. And he knew he was writing stories that were the same but different. You know, things were changing because he got it. He knew you write for the medium. Another place where I think that's done very well is Silo.
Yeah.
And I got partway through the first book in that series and all I can figure is that there were some brilliant people that said, look, we've got this and we know how to turn it into an actual good story.
Yeah, we got to fix the things that need to be fixed.
Which is basically the thing. So it's like, here's the premise. We can work with that. We can have these characters, but we're going to have to change stuff up with those characters. And now we're going to write the story. And anyhow, this TV series is much better than the books.
Well, the cardinal rule of authors is to not say negative things about other authors. So I will simply nod my head.
And considering I'm not an author in the fiction space, I feel like I have the leeway to be more critical of fiction authors.
Yes, you do. Actually, you absolutely do. It is important that non-authors certainly, I mean, certainly an author can talk smack about another author. That's, if they want to do that, that's fine. And it's no skin off my back or nose or whatever the saying is. But the my choice not to take that route is more about
you being the better person.
No, it's more about me being trying to be protective of my future career. Because people that talk smack, unless they're just the poop, right? insert another word there. Unless they're just amazingly the awesome, knees. The bee's knees. Yeah, they're going to burn bridges.
Yeah,
and that's not good. So anyway, the point is that Dune 2 is amazing. It was a beautiful, beautiful, intensely. It was just, it's just amazing, man. I'm looking forward to you seeing it.
I am very much looking at it. Yep. Yep. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing it as well.
Timothée Chalamet is amazing. Zendaya is just beautifully amazing. What's his face? Who plays Stilgar? What's his name? How am I not getting that?
If only we had a tool where we could look up these.
Yeah, I'm frantically clicking in the background. It's the big guy. It's the guy. It's Josh Brolin. No, he's Gurney Halleck. Of course he is. Javier Bardem. He's amazing as Stilgar. Josh Brolin is great, and everyone is great.
Tying it back to Silo, mm-hmm. Rebecca Ferguson.
Yes.
I'm assuming she is fantastic in this.
Yes, she is. And the funny thing is, I think of her as, what's her face from the Benedict Cumberbatch, Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, holy crap. I totally forgot about that.
I had forgotten about her being in Silo, and I have enjoyed Silo, but I definitely think of her as the doctor's assistant.
Yeah.
In Sherlock.
Totally forgot that she was in Sherlock.
Yeah. And she was amazing in that.
Yeah, she was really good.
Yeah. So anyway, the whole dang cast is freaking awesome.
Holy crap! I'm looking through the rest of the cast, and there are people that I knew that were in this because they're in part one as well. You know, like Dave Bautista.
He was also great.
Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah.
And this is awful because I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. Babs Alusenmukun. Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's doctor. Yeah. He's the guy that talks like this. And in Star Trek, and I don't like it. Come on, that was a frighteningly bad yet good impression of him as in Star Trek.
And that's this week's show. Thanks for tuning in.
Tell me I'm wrong.
That's oh, I'm so proud of you, Brian.
Anyway, the cast is great. It's a terrific show. Oh, so they're going to, I saw on Colbert, Mr. Villeneuve said that. I thought originally that Dune 1 was the first third of Dune, and it is about the first third of Dune. And mm-hmm. I thought that Dune 2 was going to be the second third. It turns out Dune 2 was the second two-thirds of Dune. So Dune is complete. The book Dune is complete. But he said that he does want to do Dune 3, and that would be Dune Messiah, the second book. And he talked about it from the standpoint of wrapping up Paul Atreides' arc.
Okay.
I kind of feel like, you know, we can do, because it came out in like 1976, Dune Messiah. So I kind of feel like spoilers are like on you.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because
anyway, yes. that would wrap up Paul Atreides' arc and the Children of Dune. If he ended up doing a fourth movie and he didn't say anything about that on Colbert, fourth movie would be about Paul's kids.
Hence, Children of Dune.
Yes. Children of Dune, yes. So, yes. I really cool. like Austin Butler's Fade Ruth, too.
Cool. Oh, Florence Pugh's in this.
And Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken was an interesting choice for the Emperor. He was great, and he didn't really walk in it up. For what that's worth.
No, I totally get what you're saying. It's, yeah, you can walk-inate a character or not.
Yeah.
And so he chose not to walk-inate this character.
Yes, correct. He did. So anyway, it was good stuff. I like it. Can we also... do we have time to talk about my book? Or what were we going to talk about? I know we said we were going to. My note here for this is me.
Here's my idea.
Yeah,
we've now given people a teaser to stay to the end of the show so they can get updates about what's going on with your books.
Okay.
Or we could just do it now.
Yeah, I thought we talked about doing it now. And then we'll break for sponsor, and then we'll talk about Apple and AI.
Sure. Okay. Let's do that.
Okay, great. Great. What were we going to talk about, though?
Well, first, I wanted to bring up that I saw online that you've been interviewed.
Yeah, I got a nice little author interview from another author named David Gaffin. He's the author of the Cassidy Chronicles, and he regularly interviews other authors, and it's a lovely format, and I really enjoy doing it.
I thought it was a great interview, and I liked how he asked you questions that gave us insight into your process.
Well, to be fair, so full disclosure, I was given a set of like 25 questions and told to pick 10 to 15 of them. So
okay,
so I decided that.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's cool.
Yeah, sure. Whatever.
Yeah. So you've done the interview.
Yep.
I'll make sure there's a link to that in our show notes because I enjoyed reading it. I thought it was great.
Thanks.
And then I am curious, do you have an update for us on King Liam, the short story that you're writing in Mason Truman's world?
Yeah, I ended up reworking the endings. Did you ever read it? I kind of feel like you blew me off.
I didn't blow you off. I just...
Blew me off. Anyway, I rewrote the end of it not anyway. And it's in the hands of an editor that I'm trying out. And once I get it back from her, it will, as soon as I get a cover for it, it's going to go out. It's going to be a free story. It's about a single ship miner. It's all set in Mason's universe, but it doesn't involve Mason. Mm-hmm. And a single ship miner who is striking out for a distant planetoid way out in the Oort cloud, which is way further than anyone should be going in a single ship. And what he finds will make a great story.
Awesome. So, all right. So that's in the hands of the editor right now.
Yeah.
And so hopefully that'll be something we can see soon ish?
Yes. Hopefully, I'm hoping within the month. I should have.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a cover from my cover artist, and that's probably the biggest delay at this point.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, man. I appreciate you letting me talk about it.
Well, I'm always interested in hearing. And I'm dropping something on you that we had not planned.
Oh, good.
Only because I hadn't... put myself in do not disturb mode. So text messages have been coming in. I got a message from Terry when he was on the show talking about how he's using Vision Pro.
Yeah.
I got a message from him just a minute ago saying, you have got to tell Brian about this app. And it's called Multiple Virtual Monitors. It's called Split Screen Multi-Display. And it lets you have multiple virtual displays in Vision Pro.
Oh, excellent.
So just passing that on because considering how heavily he's using Vision Pro, if it's an app that he's excited about, then you should probably know about it.
Yeah. And John Keat turned me on to trying to get the name of it. What is the name of it? You remember that app? He said, Brian, you got to try this.
It's the one that's kind of matrixy.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't remember what it was called.
Well, that's
great. But yeah, I know. But the great thing is when we figure out what it was called, I can make sure there's a link in
Magic
the show
Room.
Notes for it. Magic Room.
Magic okay. Room. Yeah. And basically what it does is it maps your room from the standpoint of the spatial computing, right? So it essentially remembers where everything is in your environment, and then it'll do a nice little matrix effect on top of it. It's completely useless and super fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's $4.99. I did not regret spending.
Cool.
I won't use it for much, but it was freaking awesome.
Well, let's see. Split screen. I'm bringing it up now. It has in-app purchases. So you can download it and use it for free, apparently.
Oh, excellent.
And, it has a time limit on how long you can use it. Ah. So for $19.99, it takes the time limit off.
That makes sense. And Magic Room is just, it's $4.99. Take it or leave it.
Okay, cool.
It has another mode, too, where it essentially does sort of like grid layout for all the things around you.
Mm-hmm.
But, the certainly at this point, the super fun thing is to do the matrix overlay.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, as long as I'm bouncing around on stuff we haven't planned on, mm-hmm. I was sitting here making notes so I'd remember, include Magic Room, include Split Screen in the show notes. So I'm writing these with my fountain pen.
Excellent.
And did I tell you that I took the cartridge out of my Pilot Vanishing Point and put a converter in?
Yeah.
And so
I'm sorry. No, really? That's very interesting.
Oh, you're so sweet. Changed everything because now I can put in the ink that I want.
Yeah.
And I bought a bottle of that higher end Pilot ink. It's what is it? It is Zeramishu or something like that.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't have it sitting here on my desk. But,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Because it's out of the sunlight, so it lasts longer. Anyhow, it was like, I mean, my pen already felt amazing to write with, but then switching to this higher end Pilot ink, it was like getting a pen upgrade.
Well, but you switched to that at the same time that you switched to this finer nib, right?
No, I have not changed the nib.
Oh.
So this is the one that has the fine nib in it. The other pilot has the medium nib. That would be the Kakuno.
Okay.
But then the Pilot Falcon, that's the one that has the broad soft nib. Is mm-hmm. that right?
Sure.
So, yeah. So nib hasn't changed in this one, but holy crap, I cannot believe what a difference this ink makes with this pen.
Well, you know, and to maybe offer some context to people who aren't fountain pen nerds like us, mm-hmm. If you have ever used a ballpoint pen that had a particularly, you know, fine point, or a particularly big point, or a particularly medium point. But like, you know, if there's ever been a pen that that just felt so much better for you when you're writing, it's the same, definitely, absolutely the same thing with the fountain pen. You need to have the right nib for you.
Yes, I agree. And I love the feel of the different nibs that I've been experimenting with in various pens. But wow, this vanishing point with a the Rhodium fine tip. Yep, Pilot vanishing point with the fine tip. I believe it's rhodium coated gold.
Yes,
and
probably.
And then this ink, man. It's just absolutely wonderful.
I'm delighted that you're enjoying it, man. That's great. That makes me happy.
Excellent.
All right. You know what else makes me happy?
Oh, do tell.
LinkedIn jobs.
Yeah.
So LinkedIn jobs is our sponsor, and they are not just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than 1 billion professionals. I'm going to say it again, more than 1 billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't get anywhere else. And LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive. Hiring is easy when you have that many quality candidates. So easy, in fact, and I love the stat, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. A posting. That's amazing, right?
Wow. Yeah. That's kind of crazy, actually. But yeah.
It is. So LinkedIn knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats. You might not have time or resources to hire. And they give you all the tools that you need. For instance, they give you your dashboard. And that's where you can have your job postings, your qualifying questions, your candidates. It puts everything at your fingertips. And it makes it a lot easier to do a screening, to do pre-screening, and to get to your actual hiring interviews. It's an amazing tool. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. And as a reminder, 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. It's amazing. So you can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's great. I very much appreciate them. I appreciate all our sponsors, but LinkedIn Jobs has been with us for a long time, and we very much appreciate it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thank you, LinkedIn Jobs.
Okay, so our other topic today is
Hiroshizuku. Sorry, that's the ink. It just came to me. Sorry.
So our topic,
Brian,
today.
What's our topic? Top men.
So as we were working on the topics, right? We talked about the fact that Apple has just bought another AI company, right?
Yes, Darwin AI. They bought them at the beginning of the year, and it's a company, I think, out of Canada.
Yes.
And Yeah, so it's an AI company that has specialized in making AI systems that are smaller and can operate more efficiently. And part of what they've done is also make AI technology that's used for component inspection during manufacturing.
Right. So, which,
yeah,
I'm wondering what Apple, I mean, because that's stuff that will not be consumer facing. And if that's what they bought mm-hmm. this company for, this is basically about Apple further improving its manufacturing, the supply chain.
Mm-hmm. Which is totally plausible.
It is totally plausible. And I'm wondering, I'm of course, most, you know, there are a lot of folks who sort of fixate on the generative AI products that are out there, the Chat GPTs and the...
Yeah, the whole LLM space. Yeah,
the whole, right.
Large language model.
And, you know, so there are definitely folks who would assume that Apple is chasing after that market, which I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, they've been doing their LLM efforts in-house.
Right, but I don't think that Apple's going to release Apple Chat. I don't think that our Siri Chat or, you know, whatever you want to call it. I don't like, okay.
Apple more, GPT?
Yeah, yes. I don't.
That's actually the name that Apple's been using internally for that.
Okay, fine. But I don't, I think that Apple directly, okay, so Apple has been in the AI space for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they generally speaking have been calling it machine learning. We have been talking about Apple and machine learning for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like anything that Apple does in the public facing AI space is going to be to ChatGPT as iPad was to netbook.
I think that's a fair assessment. Yes, there are ways that Apple can use these technologies that better enhance our experience with our iPhones and iPads and Macs. And that's, I think that's the path they're going down. It's not about generating garbage articles.
Right. It's not about generating garbage articles.
Great. So we're on the same page here.
Okay. That's good.
All right, Brian, here's one of the things. Yeah. Boom. And that's a sweet show. I'm thinking that you hit on an important point, which is not front-facing or consumer-facing. I have a feeling that's only part of this because okay. of what the company does or did before they were purchased by Apple.
Okay, before you say that, though, I want to stress that Darwin AI is not the linchpin to whatever the hell Apple's doing here. It's just a launching off point for us because they just happened to have just purchased the company.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, of course. Yes. Apple has been working internally on their AI tools for some time. We have experienced already what they're doing in many places. Like take a photo with your iPhone.
Yes.
That's machine learning AI. Yes. That's making that come together so you have a good photo.
Yes.
And there's other examples, but that's an easy one right there. So where I see this coming into play is now that you've said it, I think that they will be using some of what this company does for their own development production processes, But the other thing that I'm keying in on here is the smaller and more efficient AI systems, which sure sounds to me like something that would be great if you're doing on-device AI and ML operations. So the term that you're seeing tossed around for that right now is edge AI.
And, right, and that just means
it's on device, not on server. No, I just thought you were being completely wowed by my my understanding of this. Yeah. So I think we will see elements of this acquisition showing up at some point, enhancing the consumer-facing side of this, but then also on the backside for the production side. But well, yeah, it's not like they bought this and at WWDC they announced that Darwin AI is completely incorporated in iOS.
Yeah, well, you behold Darwin GPT or something like that. That's right. That's not a thing. But you know, I had another idea that they hit me when we were talking about this pre-show. And that is, we know that Apple Car team, which is gone now, mm-hmm. and that a lot of those people were transferred to Apple's other AI efforts. And the thought that hit me was, what if the move to kill Project Titan was predicated more on Apple wanting to accelerate its other AI things than it was about frustration to do with the car or problems to do with the car? Like I'm wondering basically if it was more about like, you know, screw this other thing. We're going to go balls out on AI and we have all of this AI technology involved with our car project. So let's bring all those people over to this rather than, oh God, we just can't do this. We just can't do this car. It's pointless.
Okay. I like this idea. And so as you've been talking through it, the scenario that is gelling in my head based on what you said is, here's Apple working on the car project, and it's like a moving target, ironic because car, and they're seeing, you know, we're looking at everything that we're putting into this and into our artificial intelligence efforts, and our resources are better spent focusing on the AI side because we feel that's where we can actually bring something to market that is fundamentally different. Whereas with the car, we're not going to offer something fundamentally different.
Right.
So
right.
I'm not so much.
I'm definitely not saying that they weren't tired of the car or that they hadn't reached the point where they knew that they couldn't do the special thing that they needed to do. But mm-hmm. I do think it's interesting to think about the fact that it might have been the need to go whole hog with AI that caused the knife to fall.
Yeah, I can see that.
This is pure and utter speculation. And that's all it is. This is not inside information or anything like that. It's just pure speculation.
Well, to be fair, people that listen to this show know that we will, at the drop of a hat, pull a hypothesis right out of our butts.
This is true. So I'm wondering what... I really want to know what Darwin AI was bought for. I feel
it might
like
just be a talent acquisition.
Well, no, I feel like this this is all about the supply chain, and not about any consumer. I'm not seeing anything consumer driven that Darwin AI is doing. I feel like this is about, you know, having their stuff made more efficiently.
You may very well be right. The one piece that I cherry pick out of this and say, yeah, but they could also use this on the consumer side. Mm-hmm. And it's the part about making those more efficient and smaller AI tools. And I'm thinking tools that that can be used on devices like our laptops and our tablets and phones.
I don't think so. That doesn't feel right to me.
It's not feely goody enough.
It's not. I'm not vibing. Okay. I'm not vibing with this concept. I am down with the lingo. I am hip with the kids.
You are this. This is the milkshake that brings all the kids to your yard. Anyhow, wow. Okay, there is a part of the conversation that I've been seeing coming up through various articles about this that I'm not agreeing with, and it's the part where people are saying this is Apple working to catch up with OpenAI and Microsoft and Google in the AI space.
Yeah,
and I'm not buying into that.
No, I'm not either. I'm going to iterate. This is anything that Apple does in the AI space will be to ChatGPT as iPad was to netbooks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if you remember, everyone was saying, like, Apple's behind on netbooks. Apple's got to do this for netbooks. When is Apple going to do netbooks? How are you going to sell netbooks without destroying your MacBook sales? Like, you know, it was netbook mania about Apple for about a year, year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And it took less than 6 months for netbooks to essentially be all but dead after iPad was released. Maybe a year.
Yeah. It's that whole thing with other companies doing something and then analysts and pundits jumping on it and saying, Apple is falling behind. Yep. Apple is going to lose the market because they're not doing the same thing everyone else is doing. Apple doesn't do the same thing everyone else does.
Nope. Apple does not. And I don't, I think that we are very specifically going to see that borne out probably even at WWDC, but if not, it'll be WWDC next year.
I expect we're going to see some big AI-related announcements at WWDC, even if Apple doesn't explicitly call it AI.
Yeah.
Although they might, because this new MacBook Air, the M3 MacBook Air, that was introduced, a week ago? Part of the marketing statements that Apple has for that is that this is the best computer for AI.
That is a good point.
And I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that's the message they're saying. And they actually do use AI as part of that message.
Right. They do. And to be clear, Apple has been, I feel like, at the forefront of certainly on edge AI, device-based AI. Apple is Apple is the leading edge of that. Apple is at the forefront of doing AI on your device. Like, did you see the Figure 1 demo?
the Figure One demo.
Yeah, let me see if I can't
maybe
find that.
This sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, I've got a link for you, and I'm surprising you with this. So he hasn't been able to watch it. I'm going to tell you
about the robot.
Yes.
And it was fascinating.
It was a very impressive demo, but I'm telling you, that freaking cloud lag was awful. So, all right, so what this was a ChatGPT enabled robot. So he could move things, he could like pick up an apple and give it to you if you ask for food. He could like stack dishes in a dish drainer. Yay. And he was making the decision, that the robot was making the decisions based on ChatGPT's ability to understand spoken language.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Super fun and, you know, whatever. But there was this horrible lag while the robot sent what you said off to the cloud and waited to get a response. And this was in an entirely controlled environment.
You are being more critical of this than I am, which is okay.
It would drive me nuts in real life.
So when I was watching this, I was super impressed because this is just like a one-off machine prototype thing, a proof of concept. So the fact that they were able to do everything they did with this robot, I was super impressed. The dexterity, the ability for it to like when the guy said, "I'm hungry," and it finds the apple and gives it to him so he has something to eat. And when he asks about it and it says that this was the only edible thing here, so this is what I gave you. I mean, things like that, I was like, this is pretty impressive. Also, it didn't have to rely on anyone else doing other things to make it work. So like the Tesla robot, for example, that had to rely on humans actually performing actions that were then translated into the movements of the robot. And this does not rely on a person actually performing actions. So,
yeah. And I was not impressed with this thing, man.
I was super impressed.
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like Boston Dynamics robot could run freaking circles around this thing. And that lag was so frustrating. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because Apple is increasingly having more and more of its machine learning done on devices. That is so important. It is so important for privacy in particular, but also speed.
Mm-hmm.
And that Figure One demo was a prime example of that. Man, go watch it again. Go watch it again and think about that lag. And then I want you to think about what you did wrong.
This is why I love you, Brian. So if this was being shown as anything other than here's this proof of concept, I would not have been so generous with my praise. If this was something they were saying, and you can buy it today, I would not be happy using this at home, at work, because that lag would be completely unacceptable.
But the point is, Jeff, that all of the competing AI products are all doing cloud-based computing. They're all doing it except for Apple.
And eventually that will change. But for now, this is Apple's big win.
I mean, it might if Apple schools them.
Oh, Apple's totally going to school everyone. I mean, whether or not Apple makes a robot that that can perform better than Figure One or whatever it is, Apple will school companies one way or another in this space, and it will push other companies to do better and to make their products more efficient. And
Apple has an incredible lead on doing this stuff on device. I don't really think mm-hmm. anybody can catch up. Not, as a matter of fact, I think it'll take another disruption to be able to leapfrog Apple before anybody else would be able to catch up. Because you've got silicone issues, mm-hmm. and not to mention all the technology that's going into Apple's approach. So I get super tense with the quote unquote AI companies as they are today.
I am super tense with them as well, and I expect that we will see companies follow Apple's lead. It may not be the companies that we're talking about today, but there will be companies that follow Apple's lead, and they will give us, how about if I call it a self-contained AI?
Okay.
I guess you could call it an edge AI thing, but edge AI today still involves, to some degree, relying on your cloud services, but a self-contained AI? Yeah, I can see that happening at some point.
I feel like the Boston Dynamics stuff is self-contained, but I don't actually know that that's the case.
Some of it, well, I think it's a hybrid, and some of their stuff is relying on humans still to make things happen. So like having a remote control system, like the handheld things that you see for drones. So it's some of the Boston Dynamics stuff is still reliant on human action to just function. But they are definitely way ahead of a lot of companies on the things that they're doing.
So I'm going to... Here's a year old Boston Dynamics video. We'll include that. Or no, here we go. How about we'll include a link to their channel?
Oh yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I think we've beaten this to death.
I accept your apology. Yeah, I agree. I have a feeling we'll come back to this at some point.
We've done the music, so we're done.
Oh. When did you do the wrap-up thing, and I'll stop talking?
Okay, that's this week's Context Machine. If you have anything coming on, add or question, you can find me on Threads and Instagram at GeekTales. You can find Jeff...
Yeah, you can, especially if I'm moving slow that day. Jay Gamet on the social medias, most active on Mastodon and Instagram and Threads right now.
Right. And our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, the bass is by Dr. Boom, recorded for this show. That is all for this week. Except for
thank you, yes. LinkedIn Jobs.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. And then also, you're right, we will come back to... We'll be coming back to AI repeatedly as things actually happen.
Right. Before they send out the smart drones to shut us up permanently.
Oh no. Oh.
Uh-oh.